Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And really, to our friends around the world, we are all partners in freedom. We share a common cause. But to my friends in America, you need to be seriously, seriously planning to be in parallel institutions, whether it's education. We're going to touch on that in this interview. And I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I have made almost a full shift into alternative economy. And this is what the rich are doing. And this is why I'm proud to say I represent Noble Gold. I've been advertising for almost 8 years with them, and I've been a customer for almost seven. And I have to give a federal warning. Any investment carries an inherent risk, and we give that warning seriously. They just don't warn you about what the banks are about ready to do to you. They can keep your money under the Dodd-Frank law if they want to. You're an unsecured creditor. And if times get tough, what do you think they're going to do? And times are going to get really tough. So what I recommend you do right now is you restructure your portfolio and diversify. Noble Gold can be a big part of that, and they will not press you. You have to close your own deal. That's how they're trained. I want you to call 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. And I have to say this company has the most integrity of any group I've ever worked with. And this is why I continue to be a customer, 877-646-5347. Our guest in this segment, I'm happy to have you back, is Chad Stewart. He's written the Britfield series. It's, I was telling him before we came on the air, you know, when we look at our talking points and what his work is all about, it's about how to educate your kid about the New World Order, but make it fun, make it fun. And this is going to be probably on some degree a lighthearted discussion, but also there's very serious issues here. If you're a parent or a grandparent, you really need to pay attention to this, because you need to get them out of the Harry Potter satanic worship crap and get them into something wholesome. Chad, welcome to the show. It's great to have you back.
Dave, thank you. And I was remembering the three God, gold, and guns, right? And
hopefully we don't need the guns. You know, I'm a man of peace. Yeah, but I will say this: if it's self-defense, well, that's a different matter. But yeah, God, gold, and guns. God and the gold, yeah, right there at the top.
No question. Amen to that. Yeah, and if you don't physically hold it, you don't own it. Well, like Quayle says, right?
Well, you know, and Steve's right. Steve's right about that. And I'll just say it this way. I have my gold placed in very interesting places. That's because cool. I don't trust that someday they're obfuscate. I mean, if Kamala Harris gets in, her proposals are so extreme. Usually you don't see this kind of crap from a politician until after they're elected.
Sure.
But she's scary. And you probably wish that she would have come on the scene with her communist ideas a little sooner, so she might have ended up in your book.
Interesting.
Comrade Kamala. Anyway, yes. You've had a lot of success with your series, and just take a minute here and tell the audience, if they didn't hear our previous interviews, what motivated you to write something for children about the times we live in, but make it fun at the same time?
I started about 12 years ago as a quick overview. I'm originally from Newport Beach, California. I was back east, Wellesley, Massachusetts, 16 years, did my undergraduate, British literature, European history, and then went on to grad school and then got into investment banking. It was 12 years ago when I was just dying to do something creative. And I came from a creative background, and I think we're all born creative. And we all love doing things that are creative, you know, and we get kind of stuck in a rut or pushed into or forced into a job or a career that isn't our fit and doesn't tap our gifts. And so I was there, you know, investment banking. Are you kidding me? And so that's when I had the idea for Britfield and the Lost Crown. And it was at a boring insurance seminar when I had the idea, went home that weekend, outlined the first of what would eventually become a 7-book series. And sat down, took me 4 years, 2,500 hours to write Britfield and the Lost Crown. And then from concept to launch in officially August 2019, 10 years. 10 years of hard work, dedication, commitment, frustration, failure, you name it. We went through it, but I believed in the idea, had the instinct. And I will say, just to answer your question, I'll just never forget walking in, like, I didn't really know about children's literature at that time. I grew up with it, of course, right? I loved Charles Dickens. He was great. I remember The Mouse and the Motorcycle, Beverly Cleary. Loved James and the Giant Peach. Loved Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Huge inspirations to me as a child and even as an author. And as a quick footnote, real quick, just as an interruption, I was at this prestigious event in the Hamptons last weekend, presenting Britfield in front of about 200 major influencers. Sat down afterwards at a table. Gentleman came over to me and he said, "I live in London," and he goes, in my complex, I live with Roald Dahl's wife." And he goes, "If you want to write a book to her, a signed Britfield and Lost Crown book to her, I'll make sure she gets it." Roald Dahl was James the Giant Peach and Charlie Chocolate Factory, and so I did. And I just thought, how cool is that? It's like full circle, you know, like years later. But anyway, I'll just never forget walking into a Barnes and Noble at the time, because I was researching book one and I just wanted to see what was out there. And it was going to those bookshelves, and I literally was horrified by what I saw. I mean, just everything was dark. You know, of course it was the Harry Potter era, but then it was everything that hooked its coattails to that. You know, the witch's brother, the witch's sister, magic, demigods, superheroes, occultism,
Yes.
vampires. I mean, just saturated. There was no balance, you know, at all. And it's like the days of the Hardy Boys and just fun, good, clean content was gone. And that's when I saw it more as not just something fun that I wanted to do, but really a mission. And that it would be the next 25 years of my life. And as I said on a previous interview, you know, I burned my bridges. It came to that point where it's like I was all in, and you have to be. And I knew that it was going to be a game of attrition, much like the Revolutionary War. We live in this sort of flashover substance society with fake statistics, fake numbers, overnight successes. They're all lies. It's all crap, you know. And there's great value, and you can appreciate this, Dave. You know that, you know, from a hobby to a success is about 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
And or profession, you know, and it's the same thing. Like you were a basketball coach, so I think of John. Was it Wood? John Wood, UCLA coach John
Yeah.
Wood. And you know, he was into the basics, and you know, the you know, shooting the basket, you know, 1,000 times, 5,000 times, you know, it's just going over it and over and over it. And so we officially launched book one in August 2019. Since then, it's become a national bestseller and one of the most awarded books in children's fiction. And I think, and then we launched book two, which takes place in France, Britfield and the Rise of the Lion. We launched that in July of 2021. We launched book three, Britfield and the Return of the Prince, which takes place in Italy, September 2022. We're now getting ready to launch Britfield and the Eastern Empire, 460 pages in October. Starts in Vienna, ends in Russia. So we'll come back to that because it's dealing with a lot of these subjects. But I think what makes the series so great is, number one, it's based in current time and reality, and so kids can, gee, I don't know, really connect with it, right? And it's based on family, friendship, loyalty, courage, and hope, and faith. And we incorporate geography, art, architecture, history, culture, and the four C's: creativity, critical thinking, communication, and collaboration. And that's what's making these books so engaging. Nationally, globally, our youngest readers 7, oldest readers 93, 55% of our reading audience are adults, and I receive worldwide feedback daily. So I'll just kind of leave it there and we can dig in.
Yeah, I like, let me, I jot down a few notes here because you triggered a lot in my thought process there. But as a former educator, I'm wondering what grade level are your books typically written at?
Sure. And book one is really our beachhead for book one, because Tom and Sarah are 12 years old. It's 384 pages, is geared towards that middle school audience. With that said, a lot of, you know, as young as 7 are reading it and up to 13, 14, but a lot of 14-year-olds don't like to read down because the main characters are 12. Now in book two, Tom and Sarah are 13. And then book three, Tom and Sarah are 14. And they're now, and book three is 575 pages. So really book two bridges into young adult. And then book five is definitely, I mean, book four is definitely, Tom and Sarah are 15 years old. And so book four is definitely young adult. And, but with that said, like I said, 55% of our reading audience are adults. And that's standard for the young adult market.
Yeah, it's typically, and I used to work as a therapist and I taught psychology for decades. And I can tell you, people can look one developmental life stage ahead. They really can't see two very well. And so
Sure.
through an early adulthood, your teenagers still can hook into that. But I think about my own experience. When I was in seventh grade, we did Great Expectations. And
Oh, one of my favorite.
we saw the movie, we read the book. It was fantastic. And your series reminds me a little bit about the experiences that Pip had, that everyone can't be trusted. There's some really good people,
Yes.
and then there's some people who are really out to take advantage of you. And that's how, when we looked over your book, my wife and I looked over your books, that was kind of the conclusion we came to. And I just said, this is a little bit like Great Expectations. It's the life road, and not everything is good. And I think it's good to get a dose of reality there, but you do it in a way that I don't think scares the heck out of these kids.
No, and thank you. That's a wonderful analogy. Huge honor. I'm a massive Dickens fan. I'd say who influenced me the most, it was probably Charles Dickens. And what would parallel my books closest would be Dickens, only because his stories take place, current time, real issues, real people, real characters. Different in some ways, and there's a combination of James Bond and Narnia, but that is what's cool about the series. And you're right, I don't lose the fun of it. I don't go too deep or dark. I'm very, very cautious and aware of my age group. Like in book one with Prithian Lost Crown, it's kind of like Star Wars. It's fun, it's exciting, it's the launch of it. It's intense, you know what I mean? There's definitely some darkness to it, you know what I mean? The people that are after him and stuff, but I don't go too deep. And but I touch on a lot of things, and I love book one because it covers so much. And book one is designed to be taught in the schoolroom, classroom, homeschool group. We've got an 83-page study guide based on academic standards to do that. I mean, you could sit there and spend 2 months teaching book two. I mean, book one is perfect. Now, book two, Brittfield and Rise of the Lion, that's my Empire Strikes Back. Thomas there are 13 years old. It does go a little bit deeper. That's honestly when we start to get into who the committee is that's behind the scenes, that are the puppet masters.
I know.
And how they control. And we get into a lot in book two. I mean, really. And I'm not forcing it. It just fits the narrative because you kind of have Tom. He's this orphan. In book one, you introduce this idea of Britfield. Somehow Tom is connected to Britfield. Britfield was the actual real royal bloodline of Britain, and for like 600 to 800 years, they were usurped by the Tudors, the Stuarts, and finally the Windsors, and they were thought to not exist anymore. And suddenly, something sparks, and I don't want to give anything away, but it's very cool, and it's got this wonderful royal mystery, and we blend in just wonderful history where kids are reading history and enjoying it, and we do it in such a way that it's fun and we don't saturate it.
Exactly.
But then again, we thread this stuff through, and like in book two, we even touch a little bit on transhumanism. Because there's this 1 6 foot 6, guy that's after them, among others, and he's he's not all there, if you will. And I don't go deep into it, but we talk about, machine and human and DNA and animal DNA, so for heightened reflexes. This is all stuff that DARPA's been doing for 50 years. Psychopaths. But again, it's like it's in there. We're touching on it, and it's interesting, and we're planting those seeds. And I think really in book three, Britfield and the Eastern Empire, which takes place in Italy, and the main big scene is in Rome, and they have to break into the Vatican. There's a whole nother conversation, and they go deep underground the Vatican, which is an entire city that few know about, and they're finding all types of stuff, let alone tons of gold and artifacts and science and documents, and they're after the Britfield Codex, the second Britfield Codex. Which is really cool. But in that, we deal with social media, why social media exists. And in that particular case, the committee, everything always takes place over 7 days. And the committee's getting ready to take everyone's information into a D-Wave computer, quantum computers, so they can have every single thing about a human being, every single individual. And they're going to introduce a social credit score. And if you start to speak out, deviate, and again too, it's like this is just paralleling China, and I remember when book two came out, people were reading it and saying, "What are you, prophetic?" And I'm like, "No, I just do my research," because I'd written it like 5 years prior to it coming out. So we just bring in a lot of this stuff because it's so perfect, it's so current, and it's so interesting. But we don't drive it. We don't, like it's not a deep state book, right? It's not an alternative history book. I always have to remind myself it's not a travel book. It's a fast-paced action adventure series. Go ahead.
Yeah, I told my wife when we were going through a little bit of it, I said, there's one character that's missing, and this was meant as a joke, not meant as a criticism. And she goes, "What's that, honey?" And I said, "They need to have that stranger showing up, beware of gifts from Santa Claus, Klaus, as in
All right.
Claus." And we joked about that because that was the mindset it put us in. It made me think of, how Schwab makes it sound so wonderful. You'll own nothing and be happy. And that's where I came up with the Santa Claus, with the
That's funny.
Klaus. And that's the mindset it creates. But see, again, it triggered a lighthearted reaction in me that wasn't dark. And that's the thing I appreciate. because I don't think we really want to scare our kids.
No.
I want them to look forward to growing up, but I think they need to know
Amen.
that everything is not nice and that they need to be on guard.
Yeah, and I think the drivers of the series too, and a couple other interviewers have picked up on it, is courage. I mean, that's the main driver. It's the courage that these kids have. They face fears, and they overcome them. They face a lot of challenges. They overcome them. Sometimes they make the right decisions. Sometimes they make the wrong decisions. And again, it's that stealth education. We're teaching kids how to fish, right? The school's giving a child a stale fish that poisons them each day. We're teaching kids how to fish, how to think, how to be critical thinkers, how to communicate, how to ask questions, how to look at things from different angles. That's literally what these books are doing. Not just children, but adults. And yeah, it's threaded through. But it's also too, we show adults not in their goofy, dumb, state, which is what media is trying to do. Adults are so stupid, and kids
Absolutely.
are smart and blah, blah, blah. And you don't need your parents and stuff. All the adults are very cool, very sophisticated, smart, looking out for their benefit. And yet kids are being kids. 13-year-olds are very specific. 14-year-olds are very specific. I love in book four, Riffiel and the Eastern Empire, Thomas, they're now 15 years old. And they're really kind of a little bit off the rails. You know what I mean? They're not like following directions, and they're getting in trouble for it. You know what I mean? Or they're making bad decisions because they're acting just on impulse, and it's hurting others, and they're getting busted for it. And those that are busting them for it, are looking out for their own benefit and stuff. And so it's very, very natural and real. And it's so funny because the character that I introduced, Hunter, in book three, he's now 13 in book four. He's Tom's younger brother, which is kind of a cool revelation. He's the voice of reason. You know what I mean? Like, it's so funny. Like, Tom and Sarah, like, are just kind of like, just book four, and they're kind of like, just, and he's like, should we really be doing that, or should we really be out? And he's actually my favorite character now. But anyway.
Well, it's interesting. I hear this. When I used to teach a emotional psychology course, I would talk about Kohlberg stages of moral development. And there are six of them. And generally, when you have kids that are about 12, 13, 14, they're very dogmatic and black and white in their morality. They're very dogmatic. It's not until they really develop empathy around 15, 16 years of age, and girls before boys.
Yes.
Then you take a look at the fact that now they can consider other moral points of view. And when you're talking about these characters, you're making them sound like Kohlberg stage four, very dogmatic.
Yeah.
We're getting a little bit of
Yeah.
feedback there.
Pardon?
I'm hearing a little bit of feedback. I think it's gone now. Okay.
Okay.
Listen, we talked, I should say this to the audience. We're not digressing here. I had to have Chad send me the talking points that just mysteriously appeared, and I couldn't access my email just shortly before I was to come on the air with Chad. And I won't say it's a conspiracy, but it sure is a heck of a coincidence. And I just heard feedback coming out of his side here that was a little distracting. And I don't think it's nothing you're doing. I don't know why anyone would do this. You're leading me, that leads me to another question, though. You're kind of camouflaging the politics. And I don't mean you're hiding anything, but your messages here really are beneath the surface of the story. And what I'm wondering is, what kind of pushback have you got in the form of censorship?
None that I'm aware of per se, but
Good.
we're flying under the radar, if that makes sense. And we're very we're a disruptive model. I built my own publishing house to the tune of about 2.5 million
Okay.
in 6 years. We control all the creative content. The United States for us is a pilot program. Love the US, but it is just one country. And I think everyone's obsessed with here or the bookstores or that. And then I'm like, hey, it's just there's like another 190 countries. So this is a global book series. And so in fact, we already sold the international rights to Poland 2 years ago. They've translated all three books into Polish. We had record sales for book one last year, and we're having huge sales for book two. We just launched in England through a distributor in Britain, up in Lancaster. In June, the trilogy. So it's rolling out across Britain right now. We had a publicist that was marketing it. We just launched another campaign. We're just about to lock in South Korea, Japan, and India for international rights, along with 18 other countries. We'll be at the
Wow.
Frankfurt Book Fair in October. So I mean, I could go on and on. We're moving into pre-production of the first of seven major motion pictures. So it's legitimate questions, but the point is I'm not directly attacking them, if you will say. I'm not naming names, number one. But number two, I'm not stating anything else that isn't already known and out there in research. And number three, I'm having nothing to do with them. They're irrelevant. The publishing houses today are bankrupt. They're irrelevant. The film studio, Hollywood, they're bankrupt. They're irrelevant. We don't need them. We don't want them. All of it. I mean, it's like from day one with our sales, we started with the schools, and I went directly to the schools. I didn't go to the bookstores, most of them liberal and peddling. They're just filth and garbage. They're like the last place. I said when we started 6 years ago, when we officially launched, I said the last place I want to be are bookstores. Eventually, yes, and we're in many, we're in thousands. But the point is I want to take it to the kids. That's when we launched our school tour. I drove 9,000 miles, visited 23 states, presented to over 200 schools, more than 40 to 50,000 students. I was in Arizona for 2 weeks and did 15 schools out there, all over Phoenix and Scottsdale and you name it. And a lot of them public, huge auditoriums, 300, 400 students and stuff. And so I was doing it to launch the series, but I was also doing it as a research project. You can appreciate this. Because I've been listening to you and your show for probably a decade. I love Hagman Report. I was just on him 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, Doug and I are good friends.
He is awesome, and he was so wonderful and so gracious to me. And I've been listening to his show for 10 years, and not many. Because there's not many that are really grounded and out there and well researched. It's all a lot of flash over substance, and the entire alternative media market has been diluted now. I mean, terribly. It's like everybody and their mother now. But the point is I've been relearning history for a long time, and so it naturally fits into the narrative. But with all of that said, I really wanted to do my own research when I was out there, and so that's what I was doing. I was coming into schools, talking to the librarians, talking to the teachers, thousands of kids. From private to public to Title I schools, just talking to them. What are you reading? How often do you read? Do you like the ebook? As I'm sitting here, signing books and doing stuff, and just that interaction. I mean, I did hardcore research, So we know it. We know our market. We know the U.S. And we know the publishing industry. And just as a matter of fact, I've said this. I've been saying this for years about the publishing industry. I said they're stuck in the 1970s, still peddling 8-track players, and they don't know anything about writing and literature. And just recently, about 3 weeks ago, a major distributor in the US representing about 400 publishers just went bankrupt. Gee, you figure? And interesting side note, my agent, Lori, was offered the CEO job 3 years ago. And she goes, I looked at their financials and said, no way. And so, that's what's happening. Little by little, studios are merging. Where do you think studios are merging? Because they're bankrupt. You can't keep losing hundreds of millions of dollars on crap nobody wants to see. It's dead. And I say this to encourage your audience. We're in a creative renaissance right now, literally, and it's exciting. And this is the age of the creative. Number one, we've been in creativity crisis for 30 years. Number two, creativity is the single most important skill set in the world. And that's what you want to instill in your kids, giving them as many opportunities to be creative, to think outside, painting, music, whatever. But anyway, go ahead.
It's a counterbalance because I'll relate to you a story. And this was a private Christian school. They kind of lost their mission, though. But my son was bragging, father, he was gifted at math. They moved him up 2 grade levels in the school. And this is when Obama's communist core came in, that education system. And they were following it for math as, oh my gosh. And they could only do a math problem 2 different ways. Well, my son and his friend, who had also been moved up 2 grades, they came up each independently, different from each other, but not one of the two, and got the problem right and showed their work. And the teacher said, this is brilliant, but I have to mark it wrong because it's not one of the two.
Oh my
That's a
gosh.
that, and the point I'm reason I'm telling you this is because that's a creativity killer right there.
It is. Yep. Yeah,
And
and you don't need to be stopped that often, especially at that age, right? To sit there and say, well, I'm not doing that again. I'm not approaching it differently. And again, I will do what I'm told. You know what I mean? And that's what they want, right? They don't want you thinking outside the box. They don't want you critically thinking. That's what the Britfield series is instilling. It's giving examples. What we're trying to do right now is a couple of things. We're elevating literature throughout the world with the Britfield series, number one, because it's been going downward for decades. Number
true.
two, by doing that, we're undermining what's out there. And so what I mean by that is when children are reading about Tom and Sarah, and facing these problems and getting through it, if you will, and sometimes very hard, but they're getting through it and they're thinking their way through it. And then they go read Harry Potter and they sit there and say it becomes silly to them. Harry Potter becomes silly because Tom didn't have a wand and Sarah didn't have a magic cloak and they didn't use witchcraft, which is nonsense, to get out of their problems. And I know that because I'm getting the feedback worldwide from readers. saying, I love this series and this is kind of silly now. And I used to like this, but I don't like it anymore. And that's pretty cool. You know what I mean? I mean, that's changing an entire paradigm. That's a paradigm shift in literature. And that's our goal, big time. So,
Yeah, Chad, Harry Potter did not come into our house for a reason.
amen.
And well, we're a Christian family for one thing. So right there, that was a non-starter. And then the other thing is here is I just don't like the lessons they teach.
No.
They really border on the immoral, and they lead kids down to so much of what's wrong with society today. Well, we want to convince your kids they should cut their genitals off, but parents, if you interfere, you're going to jail, California. With the stuff that Gavin Newsom's doing. And that's what Harry Potter stuff reminds me of. It's like it preps for that. And it's terrible, but I like the idea that what you have is an excitement of unfolding action, okay? But you're letting the kids live it, and you're not directing them into an entire belief system. You're just making them aware of how the world's working. That's what I really like about what you're doing with this. And what's your distribution like? Can you share that? Because I know it's big.
Yeah, I mean it's there's multiple distribution models that we're using and utilizing, and it's funny too because we launched in Britain through a distributor. It's Gazelle, good book distributor. They've been around for about 30 years, so we're excited about partnering, working with them. Britain's kind of our beachhead for Eastern Europe, and then really what's happening globally is you'll end up selling the rights to different countries like Poland, and so there's nothing we need to do once we sell the rights. And I think it's the top children's publisher in Poland that's bought the rights. They'll take it, they'll translate it into Polish, and that's it. Meaning, like, they'll send it out to the bookstores, they'll market it. We don't have anything to do with it. We just get our royalties. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the model. That is the way it works. I mean, people think like a publishing house translates it into 50 languages. It doesn't. It sells it to Germany, or a German publisher, and then they'll translate it into German or France, into French. And that's kind of the way the model works. So we're just about to lock in South Korea, big publisher there. They'll translate it into Korean, Japan, I think will be huge in Japan. So those are some of our, if you will, distribution models. We have partnerships. Collective Goods is one. They're in 55,000 schools throughout the United States. They've been around for 30 years. And they picked Pritfield and Lost Crown a couple of years ago as their number one middle school book. They picked it over Harry Potter. And it was interesting too. It was over Easter time. And everyone's like, well, let's just go with Harry Potter. And a couple were fighting really hard and saying, no, let's go with Pritfield. And we won out over that. And I thought that was cool. And interesting fact too, when they were running a campaign last year in thousands of schools, because they were trying like little pilot programs, rolling out into a bigger program. They had 80 other different titles, 80 books. I mean, Scholastic, Little Brown, Random House, all the biggies, and Britfield. And they had from the 80 books, they had 79 books had complaints, and the only book that had no complaints or negative feedback was Britfield. I thought that was very interesting, and
It's
not
not going to come
surprising.
up at school board meetings where parents are protesting. I totally agree with you because it's not pornographic. It doesn't go against parental authority. This is, and I can see why you're not getting, I mean, you're going into the UK. The UK right now is going through a total crackdown on social media censorship to the point
Heard.
where they're throwing people in jail for things they're saying here that we get away with in America. But yet you just sail right through and your books are going. And it's because you're just telling a story about the world and you're not really putting value judgments in there. But you did put one value judgment in with the dangers of artificial intelligence. Can you give my audience just kind of a sneak preview about what
And
you teach about that?
you'll appreciate this too. We got into technology and computers more in book three, which was cool. And there's all my characters are great, whether boy, girl, man, woman. Kate is like this computer geek tech guru. She's like 22, 23. You'd appreciate her. She's kind of mirrored off of someone like yourself and the others. But in book two, she's introduced in book two, and she's up in Northern England, and she's behind the scenes, and she's the one that's putting out the podcasts and the blogs, of what the corruption that's going on. And she's like hunted, and she eventually hooks up with the resistance, which is like this, worldwide group that's fighting the cabal, if you will, fighting the committee. There's just cool stuff in all these books. And so in book four, it starts in Vienna. 6 months later, and chapter one's called Fortress Austria. It's pretty cool. And Tom and Sarah are trying to break out and get out of there and get to Poland, which is a safe haven for the resistance. But what's happening behind the scenes, one of the main themes in this is, and they're always over 7 days. And so one of the main themes in this is that the committee is trying to rework their entire quantum computer system with quantum encryption, and it's all run and driven by AI. And what they're trying to do right now is manipulate and crash the stock market and wipe out trillions of dollars in wealth, buy it back pennies on the dollar, and then introduce a one world global digital currency. And that's the theme in book four. And what just happened two weeks ago with Japan? And people tell me that, and I'm like, I mean, it's like I know of it, but I just like, are you kidding me? It's like Japan lost trillions of dollars, right? And then the stock market, and that was kind of a test run, right? And my book is like I mean, we're like, and I wrote this like last year, but that's where we are. So anyway.
Well, I mean, I don't think you used the term CBDC though, did you?
No, but I do have a group that's a global group that comes together once a year, and actually it's a Berlin summit. And an agent, one of our agents is there, and that's where they discuss world events and agendas. But I don't use the same title of that. But what's interesting too is we do talk about AI, and we talk about we get into it a little bit. You know, a couple paragraphs. Again, this isn't a technology book, but we touch on it, what it is, how it works, how it functions, the dangers of it, how it can go rogue, how it can control. You know, can take over a system, the dangers of it, and you don't need more than a flick or a switch. Yet we talk about how it's not creative, and I think what's so cool about it is the battle of wits and human ingenuity and creativity as it's coming to the final crisis. And I don't want to give it away because it's really cool in book
Sure. Yeah,
four.
absolutely.
Yeah, but it's like this worldwide hacker team, Kate and a couple, you know, resistance people that are sitting here trying to, if you will, outsmart and outwit the AI system, because how the encryption works, the quantum encryption works, is like it's organic. So it's always changing and it's always moving and countering. And so it's never having one code or backdoor into it. And the second any kind of intrusion's made, you know, it counters it and then parlays and then attacks. And it's just, I think Skyfall was a great example of that in the third James Bond movies. And if you ever want to know what the cabal's planning, just watch any of the James Bond movies. Because and Mission Impossible, they're always telling you what they're doing or what they're planning, right? But there was that scene where they got that rogue MI6 agents, and the guy had his laptop, and they had hooked it up, and they're back at the MIA station, or I'm sorry, MI6 station. And if you remember, like they were pulling it up, and it was very like it was kind of moving and shifting. Do you remember if you remember that scene? Because they're trying to get into it and stuff, and that's kind of how AI works. It's very organic. It's very movement. It does think
Absolutely.
for itself. It counters. It's not stagnant. It's not stationary, which makes it so lethal. But with that said, too, and we already know your audience is smart. We already know what's at the heart of AI, what it is, who runs it. Do some research on the D-Wave computer system and who started it and what's that. That's all about and
No,
stuff.
no,
And
yeah. Listen,
yeah,
I'm well aware.
it gets as dark as it can be. But anyway, we don't
And
go there. But yeah.
you've done your homework on this because I know for a fact, and this is Dave Hodges saying it, not Chad Stewart, that AI is doing most of the censorship enforcement on places like YouTube. I guarantee
Sure.
it. I know this for a
That's
fact.
true.
And I will also say this, is that one of the things, and I do a lot of shows with a former DHS supervisor, Doug Thornton, and coming out of DHS, he said, the grid's coming down. He said at some point, he said, I don't know for how long, we don't know for how long, but we've talked about this. But here's what he said that it kind of parallels what you're talking about. AI will manipulate the system for the negative to bring it into what they want to do. So in other words, crash the system, rebuild it in the image they want. And that's kind of what you're alluding here to with the dangers of artificial intelligence, quantum computers with AI taking down the stock market. It's very parallel to things that Doug and I have talked about on the show. And
Sure.
I mean, it's really based on reality. You must have done a lot of homework for this because, listen, this stuff's not readily available. I've got to get intelligence agents on or people that work in DHS to
Yeah,
talk about this stuff.
I guess just from my research, from listening to a lot of programs like yourself and others over the last 10 years and even the last 3 years, and it's out there if you do the research and you find it and stuff.
Well,
So yeah,
it is.
it's
You know, I just did something yesterday on Rumble, where I went back to stuff I had written 11 and 12 years ago, and I said, see where it's coming in right now. Hearing the Democratic leaders talk about these things. We said this was coming. It was put into statute, administrative policies, and it's now manifesting. And so when you said you went back and people said, well, how did you know this? Are you prophetic? No, you did your research. And that's exactly, I know exactly what you're talking about. That's absolutely fantastic. Well, I've got a couple of other questions here like this. You mentioned something about fake stats very early in the interview. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I didn't get to explore that.
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, it's like, and it's fun too because I talk about this stuff in the book, but it's just a thread, right? I thread it in. As matter of fact, is there like talking to a professor at a university or something? Because it is matter of fact for those that know, right? But I mean, like the whole statistic models are just utterly fraudulent. It was funny too. We were at this high level thing in the Hamptons, and I was talking with my director of development, Natalie, this morning actually. And we were doing a Zoom call with a couple of gentlemen in London this morning that were interested in the Brickfield series and stuff. But this group was interesting, Dave, because and you would relate to it, and because a lot of them were sort of, if you will, on the other side. And I wasn't there for that. I was just there to pitch, you know, Brickfield and make some connections and partnerships. But they really are deluded and stupid. And I'm talking about that 1%, that upper echelon, the usual suspects. And she met with someone that some things I can't say, but had dinner with him last night because we were just talking about Britfield. And he was talking about the current election. And I don't even want to bring in the name of it that's running. But he's like, hey, unless Trump changes some things, you know, he's going to lose this election based on statistics. And I'm like, and she, you know, like based on what? Like, no one's voting for this thing, you know. And just so your public knows, the actual official 2020 election, the House plant got about 14% of the vote. Trump had 85, 86% of the vote. That was in 2020. Pretty much the entire United States was red, including California. California has been a red state for decades, but the fraud is that bad. And so I'm answering your question in sort of a foundational
Oh,
subtext,
I'm
but the
following
stuff,
you completely, Chad.
so that, yeah, so this, and then I saw something, and I don't even look at this stuff anymore because I can't. I'm just focused on Britfield. But it was like it popped in on like a LinkedIn or I don't know or something about this is like about a month ago, and it was like who's the one from I keep forgetting Michigan, the governor, that awful despicable thing. The woman, who's the woman from Michigan that was the governor?
Oh, Whitmer.
And it had her. And Trump, it had a bunch of others, and it showed her like 3 points ahead. I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, like, just disillusional. I mean, there is absolutely no facts to mainstream media. Mainstream media is dead anyway. I mean, it is dead. Nobody's watching it. It is dead. Newspapers, all of it. It's all fictional. There is no difference between Hollywood, media, and politics. It's all stage. It's all fiction. And so I'm answering your question about statistics. I mean, they are the biggest filthy lie. You know, I mean, it's just like unless you're in the know, like we are, you know what I mean? And it is a great majority of people nationally and worldwide. And trust me, things are moving, in my opinion, for the better. We have never been more awakened as a nation as we are right now. Millions of people, everyone at a different level. But I mean, we're having record. First time conservatives and Christians and Christian conservatives coming out and running for particular offices, school board, because they have to. And they're stopping what they're doing. Because, look, at the end of the day, we just want to live our life. You know what I mean? Raise our kids, go out to the park, have a nice weekend, go on a trip. But you've got these fiendish parasites. I wouldn't even call them insects because it's an insult to insects. They're parasites. And the line has been drawn, the Rubicon has been crossed. And I'm seeing it. And I was out in Florida for 9 days for a bunch of Britfield stuff. I was up in was Fort Lauderdale, down in Miami. I was up in Palm Beach, and I met a lot of them, Republicans. First time running for governor, running for Senate, running for mayor, running for school board, you name it. And every day, average people that have had nothing to do with politics that are like, enough is enough. And that's happening nationwide. And I say that to encourage the people that you're watching. Do not watch any mainstream media. You're not going to learn anything. It's absolutely 100% all propaganda, newspapers, magazines. It's all designed. If it's in there, it's controlled. If they're covering it, it's controlled. Get your, just stop being lazy, and get in and have some good contacts, good shows like yourself, and do your research.
It's
You
in the
have to.
polls too. When I was teaching graduate students how to do research on their dissertation, one of the things that we would cover is how to do proper polling if you're going to do that. So we talked about representative samples and how you make sure that you've got the right percentage of demographics, whether it's age or religion or income or geography, whatever it is, you have to factor them in. All they're doing now on these polls that I can get my hands on their methodology. A lot of them don't publish the methodology, and you should never believe a poll that doesn't publish their methodology. It's like a research paper without citations. And so I'm looking at their methodology, and there was one from Reuters that showed that Kamala Harris was now leading in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, and they had interviewed, and I'm going to make up the numbers here, but I'm close in the proportion, 600 Democrats and 400 Republicans. Gee, what could go wrong with that? With no other intervening variables to be measured. And so this is how they get these fake polls. I mean, in April, Washington, D.C., the Washington Post was saying, Kamala Harris, you should resign for the good of your party. And the New York Times was writing op-eds about her too. And all of a sudden now she's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And she's gone from the country's most unpopular VP, according to real polls, to where now, hey, she's beating Trump handily. Really, people, you gonna believe this crap? And that's why I wanted to
All
ask you
lies.
fake stat. It's a hot button with me because first of all, I just want to tell the public, if they don't publish their methodology in the polls, you cannot count it. It's just made up crap. If they publish it, you need to look at some kind of equal distribution and they're accounting for demographics. And if they don't do that, that's a fraudulent study. So
I'll
it's
say this statistically too, accurately. I think, well, number one, the Democratic Party's dead. It's over. It's completely destroyed itself over the. It's been dead for a while. And the only thing that it's propped up right now is with hot air, toothpicks, a bit of duct tape, and a lot of false media. But the point is I think that the actual Democratic voting party today is about 7 to 8%. That's
I would
it.
agree with that.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. I know that of the 15%, 8 to 10% is now gone. They've left. And I know that from just groups and people I've met, even in Arizona. What's it? Jexit, with the J, Jewish people leaving the party. And there's just all, I mean, it's like, and it's just like thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands all over. People are like, enough is enough. I mean, people are, it's like how stupid you have to be when your supposed elected bumbling idiot can't put together two sentences, worst economy in history. And it's just, there's no platform. What's the Democratic platform? What are they running on? Nothing. They have nothing. For open borders, so we can bring in human trafficking, drugs, diseases, and destroy the entire, United States. That's your platform. Killing children, as choice. That's your platform. I mean, communism. How's that been working out? How'd that work out for Russia? I mean, they don't have anything. And you're looking at about 7 to 8%. So when they're sitting here saying 50%, 48%, all lies, 100% pure lies from the father lies. Go ahead.
Oh, I could not agree with you more on this, but I have a feeling here that if some of the things we just talked about in the last 3 minutes were to go into Britfield, you might get some resistance, even if it was subtle,
Specific.
especially about the elections. Hey, Paul Preston's a good friend of mine. He's the head of the New California Movement,
I've been on a
and
show, I think, once last
yeah,
year.
he's great, and he gives me the same numbers you had. He said, I think he said Trump had 14 million votes in reality and Biden had 7 million, and they just flipped the numbers in the
That's
machine.
usually what they do. We know that Newsom was recalled hands down, three to one, 4 to 1. And so exactly what you said, they flipped it and made it, three wanted him to stay and one wanted him to go. Total BS, I mean, trust me. And I'm in California or in Arizona, and it's not as bad as people say it is. The administration is as bad as it gets, and hopefully, God willing, there's a reckoning coming, and a lot of that crap will be cleaned up soon. It will be one way or the other. But
No, I have to tell you, in Arizona, We export our political criminality here, and I'm not optimistic. I'm really not. There's a guy named John Thaler who wrote a book called Report to the Governor. He's a 30-year RICO investigator. He's no joke. Okay, he's done federal investigations, he's done private, and he just happened upon, for personal reasons, the corruption in Arizona. His book contains 20,000 affidavits and 5,000 references. And the Sinaloas are effectively, on behalf of China, controlling our state. And they're doing it through phony real estate money laundering deals. And then they go to bribe about a third of our legislature, many county supervisors in metropolitan areas. And this is how they have wrecked, and they have ensnared now many of the Republicans. The Republicans were more responsible in Arizona for the stolen election of 2022 away from Carrie Lake than were the Democrats. And
That's interesting.
it's because they're basically all on the take. And listen, I talk to these politicians. They'll talk to me. They'll actually call me and ask me a question about, Dave, what's the feeling in the populace about this? And then I say, well, you want to come on my show and talk about some of these things that John Thaler brought up? Oh, no, that would be too dangerous, or my
Yeah.
career would be over. That's what I get. That's what I get from this. But I want to ask you a question back to your book series.
Let me say this real quick though,
Sure.
and I agree. Like I since I've been communicating with people in Arizona, let's say the last 3 to 4 months, and I haven't had a lot of focus on Arizona, but that's the stuff I've heard, like how bad and how corrupt and how deep that route goes.
Boy, could I
That
tell
is
you?
rough.
Yeah. Have you ever, are you familiar with the show Suits on Netflix? Okay. And Mike Ross, the main character, is for most of the show until he became legitimate, was a fake lawyer. Listen to me. John Thaler's book proves there are fake lawyers with degrees that never were really offered, but they were manufactured digitally. I'm not joking when I say this is true. And then these same
That does
people.
not surprise me.
And these people become judges and they make rulings on election fraud cases. I wish I was making this up. I don't want to live in this trash, but that's, like I said, we're not going to clean it up here in Arizona until the rest of the nation makes it impossible for us to continue what we're doing. It's going
Amen
to
to
be
that.
an outside in effect, not an inside out. Our state's too far gone. It really, and California is too far gone. And that's what led Paul Preston to do the New California Movement. If Trump got elected and both houses were Republican, we would have a 51st state in New California. And Paul would most likely, he gets mad at me when I say this, but he'd most likely be the governor. And but I want to go back to your book for a second here. When I'm sure you've done kind of pre and post, kids that get exposed to reading your books, and let's say they read more than one. Do you have any information on how their values or attitudes are modified by the exposure to your books?
I'm seeing some stuff where, because again, too, these are supposed to be fun and inspirational, and it's about d other countries and travel. I mean, we're getting a little dark here. And normally on the interviews, I don't even go there, but because it's just threaded in there. But
Sure.
one aspect I'm seeing, which is really cool, and I get the feedback, is kids, parents are now going, like, taking a trip to England or to France or to Italy. I surprised a 13-year-old last year for her birthday because. A couple of investors know the family, they're homeschoolers, and it's like she's like just absolutely, I mean, and again too with homeschoolers, extremely well read, right? So when they're saying like I love Britfielder, it's my favorite series, they've read all the other ones, and I surprised her. And so for lunch, for her 13th birthday with her parents, and they had this really cool book of pictures, and they just got back from going to England, to France and to Italy, and just parts, and they weren't like staying at the 5-star hotels, just however. And these are all the places, like, oh, this is where Tom and Sarah met, and this is like the Duke's Hotel, and this is St. James, and here's the Serpentine Lake, and even like Chambord Castle in the Loire River Valley, she's like on the second story pointing to this bed, and she's like, that's where Henry threw the smoke bomb under. And it was just so cool to sort of see that level of impact where they're excited about traveling and they're going to real places. You know what I mean? And so that's one of the biggest goals that I
That's
have for this, is to
awesome.
get kids out of their mind, from local and even national, that there are other countries. Kids today, it's like they wouldn't even know where North Dakota is or Colorado, right? And I'm letting them know where like Britain is and France is. And I mean, Eastern Europe, we in book four, we cover 11 countries, and there's maps in every book, and which is great. So
Fantastic.
the kids can just flip there and just go, oh, okay. And so little by little, it's planting seeds. It's getting them to think for themselves. It's educating them. I'm giving them history, culture, art, architecture. As you well know, in book two, they go to some of the museums and they see some great works. And I always go out of my way, if you will, to bring in some great architecture or some great artwork, Rembrandt, Renoir, name it, Monet, whoever it is. I'm always
Love it.
bringing it in. I'm bringing in some of the classics like Dickens or and Great Expectations, The Count of Monte Cristo, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, that's in book one. We're always giving references to some of the classics, to some of the greats. And so we're planting the seeds and we're getting kids excited. And we always make reading important. We always make books have great value and schools, education, and libraries. So
That's, I think that's fantastic. And I want to make a distinction for our audience here. And I'm sure most of you've already made the distinction. What Chad writes about for kids to see is not dark at all. Not all. Our discussion moved into a dark area because it's the natural outgrowth of what he was talking about for adults who are living in this real world. But for kids, they're not exposed to the darkness. They're really not. And it's more educational than I think it is thematic, although it's very thematic too. But I wanted to make sure we made that distinction. Our side detour there does not reflect the books in any way. And I really wanted to make that point very, very clear because I highly recommend this. And so, we're kind of coming up on the end here, Chad. So what I wanted to do is give you a chance to talk about how people can get involved, get their kids involved in reading and so forth, and maybe how they can use the PTA to bring the books in. Or can you talk about that for a couple of minutes?
yeah, absolutely. And then again, too, as always, I mean, we're looking for partnerships, for collaboration. I think the Britfield series is a wonderful summer read. We're still in August. They're great. They're tailor-made to be taught in homeschool groups, to be taught in schools. So if you're a parent or a teacher or a librarian, bring the Britfield. I mean, read it for yourself. Contact us. And bring it into your schools. I mean, it's designed that way. They're designed educationally. That's the foundation of them. They're fast-paced. We're having a huge impact on literacy because the way they're designed, and 14, 15, 16-year-old boys that have never read a novel or reluctant readers or into graphic novels, they'll read, the librarian will give them Britfield, and then 2 or 3 days they'll come back and say, can I have book two? And it's the first novel they've read. And it's because of, I spend thousands and thousands of hours on writing them and editing them. It's based on the three-act structure. I come from 20 years of script writing, which taught me story, taught me conciseness, taught me starting on the action, ending on the action, and moving the narrative. And if it does not belong in there, it's not in there. And so it just builds and it builds and it builds. So they're great, fast-paced. I mean, we've had 12-year-olds that have read this 384 pages in 5 hours, and it's not
Wow.
because it's simple writing. I couldn't read it in 5 hours, truthfully.
That's good graduate school training.
Yeah. So
That
I'm just
really
saying,
is.
it's an, I mean, and it's so cool. It's so cool to see kids excited about reading again and engaged in a book. I got this video from a friend. She absolutely loves the Britfield series. She's like 14. And so she's at their birthday party with her friends, tables of presents, and she's opening up one because I sent her father, book three, and I signed it. And she's like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, Britfield. And she literally took the book, left everybody, and went inside to read it. I just thought that was the funniest video I've ever seen. Like,
I think
people are
that's
like, okay, see
fantastic.
you guys. But it's that kind of like excitement that it's giving kids. And the difference of it, it's feeding their soul. Everything else is McDonald's. It's flash over substance. It's poisoning the soul. Ours is feeding the soul and inspiring creativity. And, my main theme, like what's my number one main theme of these books? Britfield and family. It's about family, the importance of family, what family means, friendship, loyalty, courage. Those are the drivers through these series, period, every single time. So,
Yeah, I think it's just fantastic. So how you have a website you can send people
yeah.
to?
So, yeah, check out our award-winning website, Britfield.com, BRITFIELD, Britfield.com. It's a great website. It's got over 400 pictures of Britain, interactive maps, over 100 pages of information. A lot of our interviews are on there. Our school tours on there. Our school play. If you're interested to be putting on the school play, you can literally license it and download it right now.
I didn't know that. That's fantastic.
Yes, everything's there. It's turnkey operations.
Wow.
Director's script, actor's script, director's notes, scene by scene. 28 sound effects, 54 digital slides that you can project on the back. Oh yeah, as a side note, I don't forget if I mentioned it, but in November, we have a school in California. It's going to be, we have lots of schools that are now putting on the Britfield play, which is really cool. Because every time they put on the Britfield play, they're not putting on one of these other, if you will, other plays.
I got it. We're not going to go dark again, but yeah, I get it. We're flat out of time,
Okay, no
but
problem.
I'd like for you to hang on just for a second after
Okay.
we've been to do it. Our guest has been Chad Stewart, the Britfield series, and Britfield. And I recommend you go to the website because it's great stuff for your kids, your grandkids, your nephews and nieces. And it's not dark. It's just Dave and Chad got a little dark because it's an outgrowth for the. But
It's all
it's
good.
not where the kids are taken, but it's
Yeah.
going to make the kids aware and they're going to be sensitized to the world they live in. Anyway, thank you for joining us, everybody.
Absolutely.
We'll see you back here next time.